chapter 1. Yeah, well, if you use the dot mikra, that's always a lot of fun. Is that, you know, the first 50 pages or so are introduction, so you feel like you already got somewhere when you start. That's one of the values of the dot mikra. So the first perek and the first five psukim or so, five or six psukim of the second perek, are that first part of the book telling us how the Jews have come to this point. We mentioned last week the events that we see here overlap the second part of the book. That aspect of this is a little tricky. Meaning, we're going to be talking about wars and conquests that last for the first 160 years of the period of the Shoftim. And then after that, we're going to go back to the first Shofet, who is in the beginning of that 160 years. So don't get confused by that. Just recognize that that's what's going on. The way we know that this is covering the first 160 years, there are two reasons for this contention that Professor Elitzur makes. Number one, because this section is going to describe Jewish control of an area called Emek Yisrael. But we don't get control of that area until after the victory of Devorah and Barak, which is in the fourth and fifth perek. That's number one. Number two is that this section is going to end with a rebuke delivered by a Malach Hashem, which parallels very closely rebuke that we receive in the sixth parak. It's going to sound like basically this parak takes us, the opening parak plus a few psukim, takes us up to that rebuke. Then we're going to go back to the shoftim who were during this time, and then once we get to the end of parak hey, into parak vav, that's when we'll actually see this rebuke again going forward. You'll see better what this means when we actually go through it. The structure of this parak is fairly straightforward. I brought you in source number 7 on the sheets. First, it's going to give us the wars of Yehuda and Shimon. Then it's going to give us Menashe and Ephraim. And then it's going to give us the other Shvatim. And looking at the structure, what jumps out at you? We're going to spend 22 psukim talking about Yehuda and Shimon and their conquests. Then another 8 on Menashe and Ephraim, and then another 7 for everybody else. So we'll have to figure out, you know, why that is as we go through it. But it's going to tell us something important. One note I wanted to make sure to offer you, if you flip the page into source number 8, is we're going to use the word Kanani an awful lot in this sefer. Kanani can mean two different things. And it's not always clear, so I want to at least make that lack of clarity clear. Sometimes Kanani means the collective native tribes. Chiti, Emori, Chivi, whatever, all the tribes who live in this area, as opposed to the Plishtim who come from, you know, up in the Aegean Sea area, like we talked about last time, or as opposed to Moab and Midian and Ammon who come from the east. The Kanani are the locals. However, sometimes Kanani refers to a particular shape, to a particular tribe of Canaanites. Okay, if you think of like New York City and New York, right? Very confusing. The Kanani is sometimes a tribe. I gave you an example of this in source number 8, two psukim from the same perek in the Sefer Shmos at the end of Parshas Bo. The first pasuk says, it will be when God brings you to the land of the Kanani, the Chiti, the Amori, etc. Clearly the Kanani there are a single group, not the overarching. Whereas, just several psukim later, it says, it will be when God brings you to the land of the Kanani, and there it's using Kanani to mean everybody. So Canaanites are sometimes everybody, and Canaanites are sometimes an individual tribe. If we reach a point where that has a particular ramification, I'll try to point that out, but I just wanted to make sure to state it here. So the questions we need to think about here in this perek are, number one, why are we giving so much space to Yehuda / Shimon, and so little to everybody else? We had some more from Menashe and Ephraim, and then almost nothing for anybody else. Another question we have to think about is, this is going to give us a guide to the military conquests of those first generations that are living in the land. Is this really all about success and failure in military conquest, or are there deeper messages that we're supposed to be getting from this? And then third, is there anything here that foreshadows the future of the Jewish people beyond Sefer Shoftim? Because otherwise I wouldn't be asking the question. You figured me out. Okay, so let's jump into the Sefer. Vayihi, acharei Mos Yehoshua, vayishalu b'nei Yisrael b'ashem le'mor, mi yale lanu el haknani batchila lihilachem bo. After Yehoshua has died, the Jews inquire of God, saying, who should ascend for us among the Kanani first in order to fight? I'm going to do the first three psukim together, and then we have to break this down and figure out what's going on. Vayomer Hashem, Yehuda ya'ale. Hashem says, Yehuda should go first. Hine nasati es haaretz biyado, I have given the land into his hand. Vayomer Yehuda l'Shimon achiv. So Yehuda says to his brother Shimon, Ale iti v'gorali, ascend with me in my portion, v'nilachama b'knani, and we'll fight the Knani, v'halachti gamani itcha v'goralecho, and then I'll go into your portion and fight as well there. Vayelech ito Shimon, and Shimon goes with Yehuda. Why is this a reasonable and logical alliance? Right. Remember we said that as part of Yaakov's curse, he said regarding Shimon and Levi, I will scatter them among Israel. So Levi doesn't have a portion. Levi gets cities scattered around. And Shimon gets cities within Yehuda. He doesn't have his own portion either. So it makes sense. Yehuda turns to Shimon and says, look, you have cities in the middle of my land. It makes sense for you to help me fight, and then I'll help you fight. The partnership is a logical one, and we pointed out in Yehoshua when we looked at this that this isn't the first time that Yehuda and Shimon have an alliance, right? Yehuda bails out Shimon once when we blame Shimon and Levi for throwing Yosef into the pit and trying to get him killed. So Yehuda bails him out and says, let's sell him instead. And then, when is the other time Yehuda bails out Shimon? That's Binyamin. When is the other time he bails out Shimon? Literally bails out Shimon. When is Shimon in jail? No one remembers this part of the story. Yeah, in Mitzrayim, Yosef says, I'm going to keep one of you. He takes Shimon and he puts him in the cage, right? And sends them back and says, when am I going to let Shimon out? When you bring Binyamin back. And Yaakov says, I'm not sending Binyamin. And who is it who convinces him? Yehuda. Yehuda brings the bail, so to speak. Yehuda brings Binyamin, and therefore Shimon gets out of jail. Yehuda is always looking out for Shimon. There's a thing going on here. A thing. Technical term. So, Yehuda is taking care of Shimon in this instance again. In looking at these three psukim, what questions should we be asking?
How did they talk to God?
Yeah. How do they talk to God is a good one. What else?
Why is Yehuda coming up?
Right. Why Yehuda? Why should Yehuda be first?
That's a good location.
What does that mean? Why is his location better?
Meaning that's where they have to go fight, like in their area.
Okay. Could be. The South seems like a nice place. Warm that time of year.
Maybe that area wasn't conquered anymore? They needed to conquer that area?
In other words, the original conquests hadn't been that strong in that area?
Yeah.
That's an interesting idea. When we mapped it out in Yehoshua, in terms of where the conquests were, it's true, the conquests were more in the central part of the land. Although the truth is that that's mostly where Yehuda's conquests are as well. They don't go very far down into the Negev. Her conditioning is needed.
Asking Hashem, like, we shall lose main throughout.
Yeah, the Jews just asked God. They, after Musaf, they all got together and said, now let's, turn to Hashem and ask, what exactly is this? So, the general consensus of the commentators is that they ask via the Urim V'Tumim. Right? Remember that Elazar is the Kohen Gadol, and he lives on after Yehoshua, so he could still be the Kohen Gadol at this point, or it's not him, it's whoever takes over from Elazar. But the Kohen Gadol has the Urim V'Tumim, this breastplate that's used for Nevuah, for prophecy, and the Jews turn to God via the Urim V'Tumim and say, who should go first? And Yehuda's stone lights up. Somehow, there's a message that it should be Yehuda is going to go first. But this leads us to another question. Is this the first time they've done this?
That last.
ask Hashem using the Urim Betumim. We've had times when they didn't ask Hashem. If you remember when the Givonim came to them, right, and tried to make a treaty and claimed to be, we're from far, far away, right, and they tricked them, and the Jews are upset because they made a mistake and they didn't ask Hashem. They didn't go to ask. Have we ever seen them go to the Kohen Gadol? Those who are here for Yehoshua are on the line here.
I just don't want to look at that anymore.
So that's interesting. They didn't go Ra'al, and there, the Goral, we are taught, does have Hashem manipulating it. There was some debate because we had Psukim that led in two different directions.
Right.
Some indicating you're supposed to do it, and some indicating it's from Hashem. We know they went in with Achan. When Achan took from the Cherem, they went to God, and that involves the Kohen Gadol. Take a look on your sheet number 9, please. This is what Moshe said is supposed to happen regarding the leadership after his day. V'lefnei Elazar HaKohen Ya'amod. He, Yehoshua, shall stand before Elazar. I remember if this is Moshe speaking or Hashem speaking. But he says, Yehoshua is going to stand in front of Elazar, who is going to be the Kohen Gadol. V'sha'alo b'mishpat ha'urim lefnei Hashem. And he'll ask him for the dictate of the Urim, meaning Urim v'tumim. So Yehoshua was supposed to ask for guidance from Elazar. However, he did not. This indeed is the first time that we get an explicit mention that in the ordinary course of affairs, not like Achan, which was unique, that in the ordinary course of things, we're going to actually ask the Urim V'Tumim. Take a look at the Gemara in source number 10. This I took out of the middle of a discussion. I had to add in bracketed words or else it wouldn't have been clear. It's discussing the issue of what's called Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabo. A student is not allowed to give a psak when his Rebbe is present. And present doesn't mean present in the room. Present means present in the area, well, alive, but in that region. If his mentor is there, then send people to him. You're not allowed to give psak. And there are severe penalties for it, and that's what Rabbi Eliezer comes in to say. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Moridin Oso Migdulasa, Rabbi Eliezer says, somebody who gives a ruling in front of his Rebbe is removed from his position of power. Shenamer, as the pasuk says, Vayomer Elazar HaKohen El Anshei HaTzava. This is before the war in Midian, or the war against Midian, I should say. And Elazar tells them what they're supposed to do with the spoils. Right? That's where we learn a lot of kashering and togeling, comes from that section. So Elazar says to the warriors, this is what you're supposed to do with your spoils from the war with Midian. Well, why is Elazar telling them? Moshe should be the one telling them. Why is Elazar the one instructing them? Moshe counts as the Rebbe pretty much for any other Jew, right? Aaron speaks because he is Moshe's Navi. By this stage in Chumash, Aaron is gone. Elazar shouldn't be the one teaching, even though the rest of the pasuk says, Zos Lukasa Torah Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. He says, this is the law of the Torah which Hashem told Moshe. But that's not good enough. Ava gav de amar lehu, even though he told them, la'achi abba tziva va'osi lo tziva, even though Elazar said, God told my uncle, God didn't tell me, he says, this is what God told Moshe, afilu hachi yanish, nonetheless he is punished for it, dichsiv, v'lefnei Elazar ha'kohen ya'amod, v'lo ashkechanid de'itztrich le'Yehoshua, because the pasuk says he is going, that Yehoshua will stand in front of Elazar, and in fact, we don't find that Yehoshua ever needs him. Yehoshua doesn't go to him. So in other words, when we see in the beginning of Shoftim that they go to ask, he doesn't. This actually is a first. Normally it doesn't happen. Why? Punishment for Elazar. God says, I don't need you. I can go around you. So you took status for yourself there. I'm going to take status away from you. That's the Gemara in Erevin. For those who were wondering before when I said it's okay to disagree with Abarbanel, so Abarbanel gives a different answer. Take a look at source number 11. Abarbanel also says that the Jews never went to, the Yehoshua never went to Elazar, but he gives his own reason. Lahagdilo be'enei ha'am banivuaso me'ez Hashem in hashamayim. That in order to elevate Yehoshua in the eyes of the nation, his prophecy came from God, from heaven. It wasn't about punishing Elazar. It's about elevating Yehoshua. Which is a good idea, because remember, for those who were here when we did Yehoshua, remember the beginning of the Sefer, one of the big questions was, how do you take over from Moshe? Is anyone ever going to take you seriously? So if Hashem speaks to him directly, that gives him a leg up. And therefore, he says, he quotes the pasuk we see repeatedly, that's why you find many times Hashem told Yehoshua. So the Gemara says this is the first time they go to God via the Urim Bitumim to punish Elazar. Abarbanel says it's the first time to elevate Yehoshua. However, most commentaries say no. Most of the commentators say, reading the psukim simply, this isn't the first time. They've been going all along. They've been going to God, and the only reason this is singled out, the only reason that here it says specifically they asked, is because this is a special occasion. Take a look at Ralbag in source number 12. He's not the only one to say it. Mitzudat David says it too. Ralbag writes, V'ra'ui sheneida. Ralbag is writing in the end of the 13th century, beginning of the 14th century. That's right. He says, V'ra'ui sheneida. He says, it would be appropriate for us to know. It's not that they didn't ask Urim Bitumim in the times of Yehoshua. The Torah testifies, and he means what we saw in number 9, that during Yeshua's time they will ask the Urim Bitumim. Maybe what it's trying to say is only that after Yeshua dies, they need to ask who's going to go first, why? Ralbag is always practical. He says, your first war is the root of all the future wars. If they lose the first war, that's going to encourage everybody else. And they're going to say, God's not with them anymore. Yeshua died. Now we have the advantage. So therefore, it's very important that you pick the right one to start. But if they defeat their enemies at that point, that would cause everybody to be afraid. Then we would have an easier time winning. So Ralbag says that we pick Yehuda as the choice of who's going to go first is a practical choice of great import, and therefore they go back to Hashem to ask for it. Mitzudat David has a similar idea. So what we get here then, and I think we're going to pause with this. I have a hard time telling what time it is because I restarted the recording when we started the parak, but I think I know what time it is. What we're seeing here right off the bat is, number one, that we have some questions to ask regarding the first parak. We have to figure out what's going on with this emphasis on Yehuda. And now we have a little bit of knowledge that it comes from God, but we need a lot more in order to understand what's really happening here. But we see the Jews asking who should go first, perhaps because they didn't have to do this before. It worked through Yehoshua, whether to punish Elazar or to elevate Yehoshua. Or perhaps because this is an important point in their history, it's a turning point, and therefore we need to ask God. In which case, the message is not only about what's happening now, right? Because, spoiler, they're not going to do this a whole lot rest of the book. Let's ask God what we ought to do. It's emphasizing now consulting with God when you start the campaign, even though this is a military and pragmatic thing. You might have thought, let's have a military council, and we'll decide who's best positioned to go first. We're going to turn to Hashem now, and we're going to ask what we should do, and they're not going to do it much in the rest of the Sefer. So, God willing, next week we will continue in this parak. Yeah? Yes?
The first word of this
Sefer. No, next week is still 1 week before. Yeah.
The first word of this Sefer is very telling. It's already foreboding.
The Vayehi?
The Vayehi. The whole Sefer is doomed already.
Right. I didn't mention that, but the idea that Vayehi automatically signals a negative is an idea within the Gemara. Then the Gemara says it's with Vayehi Bimei versus Vayehi. But yeah, we always get a sense of foreboding when you see the Vayehi. That is true. One request before people.